In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
And welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today, I'm actually not entirely sure of what we're talking about, because this is another one that Mike is bringing to the table. Mike,
yeah.
What are we talking about today?
Well, let's see here. I'm curious if most people have heard about this this company. You've heard of Universal Music Group, have you? Possibly?
Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, there's Universal Studios.
Yes.
Now, I'm guessing it's a subdivision?
It is.
Okay,
that's exactly what it is. Universal Music Group and Universal Studios, or Universal Studios is the actual physical location.
Yeah.
Universal is known for their films.
It's basically just a company that owns a lot of that type of product, music, films,
media,
TV shows, media.
General media, film.
Okay.
Okay, so basically, Universal Music Group was actually founded back in 1934. Way back.
Okay.
They actually started as Decca Records then. Then in 71, okay. they changed themselves to MCA.
Oh, MCA is...
MCA Records is the most familiar name.
Yeah, I've seen MCA on the back of CDs and cassette tapes and all that kind of stuff many times before.
Yes, that's the one that most people see. And they were MCA. In 71, they changed their name to MCA Records and went through 1989.
Okay.
Also, they changed themselves from 89. They went to MCA Music Entertainment Group, I believe, up until about 96, and then changed themselves to Universal Music Group.
Bought out by the media company?
I believe they were bought out by Universal.
Okay,
but basically, they took in Universal and all that kind of stuff. And in the time that they've been around, they have been a host to a slew of artists. Huge. Obviously, they've had a huge thing in film.
Squillions
and squillions, sir.
Yes.
Very, very many. Basically, they've been doing stuff for a long time, and they have a very large archive of material from these artists that they still own the rights to today.
The artists own the rights, or Universal owns the rights.
Sometimes the artists sign their rights over, especially it's very common when it comes down to a new record contract.
Yeah.
I think one of the first times where that didn't happen, and it was like a moment in history, was Ray Charles was one of the first artists to negotiate the rights to his masters. And as a matter of fact, it's actually been very much a... issue with a lot of artists about the rights to their masters. If you create a recording or you have the equipment or you go to a studio, it's you creating the material, but the tape, the physical tape itself and anything on that tape is either the right to the artist or it's the right to the label that has signed the artist or possibly co-owned, depending on whether or not that's under the contract.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably cite many, many different artists that have had many issues with this, many albums that were made just to fulfill contracts like this.
Yeah.
And many disputes that have been happening. I mean, yeah, and you have somebody like Prince, for instance, who basically did all of his own recording, all of his own producing, all of his own everything.
Yes.
And therefore, his estate still owns the rights to... volumes of unreleased music.
You could record your own stuff, and the music group that you work with may co-own rights, or they may be their distributor.
But contracts
can get very complicated. One of the biggest cases in rights to masters has to do with the Beatles, Sony Music.
Oh yeah,
the Beatles, when they signed their first contract, signed the rights to their masters over. As a matter of fact, the big thing, Brian Wilson's father, the Beach Boys, before Pet Sounds came out, just before.
Yeah, he signed his stuff over
to all of their hits, and they lost a lot of money because of it.
Sometime in the late 80s, didn't Michael Jackson end up buying a bunch of the Beatles stuff when it came up for sale?
It was in the mid 80s, and he outbid Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Funny enough, did you know that Paul McCartney ended up buying the rights to Thriller? Just before Michael died?
That's not surprising at all.
And he did the 25th anniversary reissue and like all that crazy stuff. But and then he started putting – because Michael Jackson was working with Sony, and he had signed a contract where they made profits, but he owned the music. And so what he would do is be like – basically his agreement was, I have access to you and your lawyers. You guys protect my stuff and I'll split the profits with you. And they have been extremely protective.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
now, that is unrelated, although Sony does become kind of part of this next.
Okay, so what happened with this Universal Music Group?
Well, like any other large label, they have had a slew of legal issues and problems that do come up with companies, especially when you're dealing with something as sensitive as artist.
Intellectual property.
Yeah, intellectual property, artist information, that kind of stuff, right? Some of the legal problems that they've had back in 1998, between 98 and 2000, one of the things that they were part of that was an agreement with Sony and a lot of other record companies was CD price fixing. They actually would fix the prices of CDs so that people that were selling stuff at discounts like Best Buy and Target and Tower and some of those places that were trying to get rid of some older material, they would actually – they had an – it was a network of music companies that had an agreed minimum price that they would never go under so that artists will at the bottom be sold at that, which means that these discount rates, sales, all this kind of stuff that was happening, they could never go under that price. And because of the price fixing – that ended up creating a large problem with sales. But the problem was is that they were trying to protect the profits on their intellectual property.
Not realizing that it would stifle the market.
Absolutely. And that's what it did. It did that for a while, and it caused a lot of issues with a lot of retailers. Retailers started to back down on the minimum amount of discs they could happen because especially around 98-2000, what else was rampant at that time affecting sales?
I thought that that's where you were going with this. This is the time of Napster.
Yes. And it was the time of Napster. It just kicked off, and it was a combination of things like CD price fixing.
See, this is a beautiful thing. Yeah. Most people just think of Napster as the file sharing, and then they bring Lars Ulrich into it, and not realizing there were so many other things that were at play in it. And then we look at the world now and how we access music now. I mean, we have apps that are radio stations that basically play whatever we want for music now.
Yeah.
We can watch whatever we want on YouTube at our leisure, just
for free.
Just playing for the data.
See a 5-second ad or 10-second ad or something, watch
and,
whatever
and
free.
And then if we actually want to buy the things, I've seen people buying songs off of, or whole albums off of iTunes for like $6.
Yep. Absolutely. Happens all the time. I actually was perusing the iTunes and you get reminded when the death of an artist comes around.
Like, yeah, because the stuff will be suddenly up there everywhere.
It'll be up there everywhere because everybody's looking for him, right? I mean, that's I will say that I am guilty of buying the hell out of a bunch of Motorhead when back when Lemmy passed.
I mean, what do they have, like 4 good songs?
No, they've got like 15 or 20. Quite a bit. There's actually a lot of covers that they did too.
He does a lot of covers.
So good.
Some of them are good. Some of them are just like, okay, it's a dude with a really gravelly whiskey voice.
Everybody thinks Ace of Spades is the go-to. No, dude. Orgasmatron and We Are the Road Crew. And dude, there are so many good ones.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
But, anyway,
back to this point.
There are some other ones that they've had some issues with. Are you familiar with the term payola and what it means?
Yeah, basically paying radio stations to play songs.
Mm-hmm. They were caught with that in like 2006. They were essentially bribing radio stations.
Yeah. With everything, always follow the money.
Okay, did you remember back in like 2007? No, I want to say it was like 2013. There was this video of a lady that was... She was videoing her daughter just dancing, just like her, you know, little girl dancing for about, you know, 20, 30 seconds. And in the back of the, I believe in the back of the video, in the background of the video, Prince's, I think it was Let's Go Crazy was playing in the back.
Okay.
Okay. Well, Prince was a Universal artist. And she put that video up on YouTube for about 20, 30 seconds. And YouTube had the video, Universal claimed the copyright on that video and had it taken down. Now, other artists, and during this time, this entire time, YouTube has been trying to build up some kind of a network between record companies, artists, and the like to have a registration process so that when YouTube actually has somebody pull up a song or listen to it, the artist gets paid or the label gets paid, or whoever the money goes out to whoever it is. But before that, they were trying to figure out legally, how do you do this?
Yeah.
Well, people were creating different entertainment mediums that happened to include sometimes copyrighted music. Well, what would normally happen would be, Oh, this song's
going up. I've seen videos of like people lip syncing to certain songs.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine if a record company decided to go, no, you're not allowed to use our song. I'm muting your video and I'm blocking it on copyright grounds. Even though you made the video, we own the music in it, so you can't play your video. Kind of a jerk move.
It is, and it really it,
and
it
who knows, maybe it's for 15, 20 seconds.
But it stops people from celebrating the music and having enjoyment of the music.
Exactly.
And it's not like they're trying to make money or anything off of it.
Now, in the time since, obviously, YouTube has figured out a formula to do that, you can't actually do covers. You can put copyrighted music, and what ends up happening is there's ad revenue that's added to the video once the copyright claim has been made, and then the original artist or whoever the company is
That's a really good way of
money for it.
Hey, I mean, we had a discussion a bit ago about YouTube having some problems with their way they handled advertising and whatnot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is actually a good solution that YouTube come up with. So,
oh yeah, this is one of the best solutions they came up with. As a matter of fact, as somebody who has, I have looked into the possibility of putting covers up on YouTube of some stuff that I've recorded just for the fun of it and doing like a covers video or something like that, just because it's fun, possibly to do.
Could be, yeah.
And I have looked up, and there is an entire network, like there is a page dedicated to what songs can you use? Can you use covers of it? Can you perform a cover? Are you allowed to use video? Can you can you use video of this artist? Can you do this? And some of them will say yes. Some of them will say it's blocked in certain countries. Some of them you say you can't do that. You know what I mean? So it depends. Sometimes variances, covers, all that kind of stuff. However, there is a network and a system. Some are still not allowed, but that's based on the artist and it's based on their discretion, which fine and dandy, but at least there's a system that's put up there to allow that to happen.
So that means that we can do my lip syncing video to Spice Girls Wannabe, right?
Yes. Yes, you can.
No, we can.
You can.
We can.
You can, James.
We can.
You can do that.
We can.
You can do that.
You're not getting me here.
No, you're not getting me.
Proceed, sorry.
Okay. So anyways, another thing that they were locked in with, there was actually, and this is one of their worst decisions, they actually loaded up there was a video that was loaded up of one of the, it was a Universal artist, I can't remember her name, and she was actually singing God Save the Queen, the song God Save the Queen,
okay,
the British National Anthem, God Save the Queen. They had the video blocked on copyright grounds, stating that they considered God Save the Queen to be a copyrighted song.
Yeah, that's public domain doesn't work that way.
Yeah, exactly. Bad choice of terminology.
Yeah, it's like when you're trying to do a play at a playhouse,
mm-hmm.
just do Shakespeare.
Right.
Shakespeare is public domain. You don't have to pay for any rights.
Exactly.
Don't do like a musical that has been on Broadway within the last 30 years because you're going to pay out the butt for it.
Oh, totally. Anyway, absolutely.
So Universal was doing all these things with YouTube.
Okay. So Universal was doing things with YouTube, and they've had a number of legal issues.
Okay. So legal issues.
My point to this conversation today is because something has recently shown up in June of 2019.
This year,
a couple of weeks ago. Actually, it's been like maybe a week and a half since the article came out. We're recording this on July 1st, by the way. This may come up later. We don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know for sure.
But basically, what ended up happening was back in 2008, on June 1st of 2008, Universal Studios had a fire. There was a fire. It was a 3-alarm fire.
Okay.
It took out 3 acres. Okay.
Ouch.
Yeah, pretty bad, right? It was actually on the side of, it basically took out 3 acres, and from what you could physically see in the lot, it had taken out the entirety of the King Kong, it was a King Kong attraction that had been taken out, the King Kong Encounter.
Okay. This fire happened in 2008.
2008.
But this article just came out in
2019.
June, 2019.
Now, back when the fire came out, obviously Universal made a statement about it. They said, hey, you know, we're really sorry, but something happened. And the fire, by the way that it was started, was a worker was using a blowtorch to heat up asphalt on the side of a facade on a building. So it was heated asphalt used for a display of some sort, some kind of a facade, decoration of some sort, right? Well, he didn't wait for it to cool. And then he left. And the building caught on fire.
Okay.
Okay. Now, this building that they're talking about, specifically when when it came out, there was a couple of things happened. There were some fire department injuries. I think there were some police injuries. There was a total of 17 injuries. No deaths, nothing crazy, but there was a relatively decent amount of archival material that may or may not have been destroyed. Now, when Universal
was this talked about in 2008
they did mention it in 2008, but this is what they stated. Universal stated that about 40,000 to 50,000 archived digital video and film copies were destroyed. Just digital copies, not a big deal. 40,000 to 50,000 digital film copies. They probably got another digital backup sitting somewhere in a network or something.
So basically, made it seem like it wasn't really an important loss.
Exactly.
But that's not so, is it?
No, sir.
Okay.
So the news just recently came out. Here, let me actually set this up a little bit. Now, I obviously own some digital copies, digital backups of stuff. Yeah. I own master discs, some, you know, two-track stuff. Now, in the digital age, it's a little bit more, it's a little bit different as far as the medium and some things that you keep in mind. As somebody who is, I would essentially consider myself a poor artist, and I was for a very long time.
Yeah.
Right? I don't make a lot of money on this stuff, but I make material and I archive it at least as well as I could. Now, I myself am victim of my own stupidity, and I actually lost a hard drive. A hard drive became corrupted.
Okay.
That hard drive included a lot of very priceless demos and old recordings, multi-track recordings from when I first started to get into recording music.
That sucks.
Just archival stuff. It does suck. One of the things that it did lose for me that I'm very upset about that I have been pining over trying to, I still physically have the hard drive, and hopefully if I can get it repaired, I might be able to get the old material.
I might know a guy.
Okay. That would be nice, because it's been sitting and I've never done anything with it, but I've got it sitting. I think it's like right over in, well, anyways, you can't see it from here. But I lost the entirety of my band's first album's multi-track masters. Now, the two-track masters, yes.
Wow, that was on there?
That was on there.
Wow.
Now, I have some disc backups, but I only have disc backups of the guitar tracks, the bass tracks, and I do have some mapping, because the drums on that are digital.
Yeah.
No, I had to perform them. We were between drummers at the time, and we had to come out with the material. Yeah. Now, I have those bass areas, and I have the material from, personally, what I thought was the most important was all of like the lead guitar tracks that Carl had performed. I have those, and I have the bass tracks, and I have those. What I don't have is all of the vocals.
Ah.
I do not have any of the vocals. I think I'm missing some separate drum tracks, but the thing is, I have the program that I used for the drum track, so I could easily recreate it
if you needed.
Yeah, I could replicate that. That's not really a big deal to me.
The vocal tracks should be
the vocal tracks are like, yeah, that's a one of a kind deal. That's it. It's gone. It's lost. I can't do anything about it unless I can possibly recover this old drive. And it's an old rotary, way old rotary drive that I've got, and a standard rotary physical hard drive. Now,
like I said, I might have the people that can help you with that.
That would be fantastic if I could. Now, that being said,
yes,
I said that because I am trying to put out the importance of what has actually happened since this fire.
Okay.
So in the fire, the loss was, like I said, reported to be 40,000 to 50,000 digital archival copies, not really a big deal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't the case.
So let me get some basis here.
Yes.
How did this come to light here in June of 2019, 11 years later?
Well, the New York Times is extremely good at investigative reporting.
Well, I mean, if you give them 11 years, yeah.
Well, all they have to do is stumble across an email or two. It was 2008.
Wow.
So here's what's going on. As they have been, they basically got their hands, as far as I know, on, I believe it was some emails that were counting the actual damage.
Just want to let you know, this is why I don't write emails. This is why I write stuff on paper, show it to people, and then burn the paper afterwards.
Deal. I understand that. Now, basically, the New York Times outed Universal in an article in 2019.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it was a New York Times investigation that finally found
that between 118,000 to 175,000 analog audio master tapes were destroyed in this fire. That is, now when I say analog audio master tapes, I mean the original recorded reel-to-reel tape that was from the studio sessions for nearly 700 artists.
Wow, because I'm thinking, the only thing that I have is kind of an idea of the reel-to-reel type master tapes is the urban legend about the master tapes for the Bohemian Rhapsody recording session and how they overdubbed it so many times. Basically, the tape was almost see-through because they had just ran it through and overdubbed it so much.
Well, I don't know if it's about see-through because the way that tape works is not like that. Tape is actually a magnetic medium.
I'm just saying this is the urban legend that comes from it.
That's not the way tape works. Yeah. However, tape can be worn out and it can lose its fidelity and it can break. It'll break before you can see through it.
That was actually the problem with the...
you're not like scratching onto the tape. What you're doing is you're actually running it across a magnet and an electrical signal changes magnetic poles in the tape to reflect what's going on. That's why tape echo, you've ever heard of tape echo? That's why that happens. It's because the tape sitting on the reel, the polarized magnet sitting on the tape that's reeled onto itself will start as an echo and you'll hear some, like listen to some old Led Zeppelin tracks and you'll hear the echo of a vocal come in before the actual vocal does on some of the stuff. That can be done either with like really, really, if you'll hear really, really old analog tapes, like I'm talking like Buddy Holly stuff.
First of all, I just want to say, children, this is what happens. This is the knowledge you gain when you go to school for our audio engineering.
Yes. These are the original tapes.
These are the original tapes of the original recordings of these 700 artists. This is the master of the recording. This is like the first version of it ever made.
First version of it ever made. This is what came from the studio on the day that it was recorded.
And this is what was used to make all of the copies that we went to the stores and bought and listened to. And
exactly. When you listen to, okay, so one of the things I like to state based on this, which is very important.
So let me put this in another term.
Yes.
This is the Mona Lisa, and all we bought. No, better. Let's throw a Nick Cage thing on this. Okay. This is the actual. These are the actual declarations of independence that are being that got burned.
Yes.
And all we were buying in the store is the poster copy that he gets. And fakes people out with in the movie.
Exactly.
So this is all the real declarations of each of these groups, each of these 700 artists.
Yeah.
Gone. Yeah. And all we have left is the poster copy now.
That's pretty much it.
Wow. That's a bit of crazy, man. That's a bit to wrap your head around.
It's a large, and there's a lot of artists that were affected. Now I have no clue as to whether or not this is the only.
Now, I mean, here, I'm just wondering, how could this sit for 11 years and us not hear from the artists the lamentation of the loss of this? Was this kept from the artists as well? Did they not know that these master recordings were destroyed?
There may or may not be a few artists that are putting together a class action lawsuit because they're hearing about this for the first time.
So they're hearing about it for the first time too. This has been something that's
been
kept
from
them.
And there's a lot of big guys, artists that are no longer with us.
Wow. Okay.
That have been affected by this. I mean, we're coming up on 2020. This is universal. They were started in 1934. They might even have some archival recordings. These are recordings that go back to the dawn of intellectual property copyright. We're talking like 1928. We're talking stuff from the 40s, man.
The original Crossroads artist? Is he one of them?
I don't know if Robert Johnson is one of them.
Because I know there's only so many recordings of his stuff that exist.
I'm not sure his stuff was put into Universal or not. Let me look up the list because that is a possibility, but I doubt it. There is a ton, and I will go through a list of them here in a bit. But basically, let me take a look here.
There are
a bunch.
This is the mic looking through his phone sound. Okay, tell you what, we're at a time where we can take a break on this.
I think that's a good spot.
So before you go for a list, so this has just been out that these
no,
huh?
Robert Johnson's recordings were not lost.
Okay, So this is just come out in June of 2019. Mm-hmm. This is basically a thing they've sat on for 11 years.
Uh-huh.
Investigative report from the New York Times has brought this to light.
Yep.
And artists are now looking at a class action lawsuit to come out. Many of them, we can say, just finding out, like we are, that all of this stuff was lost. See, I saw this news report in the various news stuff online.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, why is it a story from something that happened, a fire that happened in 2008? Why are we hearing about it? And I didn't look any further into it.
Because they've squashed it for the last 11 years.
That's just amazing. Okay.
And in this next section, I'm going to go over the individual artists that are affected because this is going to, you think this sounds big on itself? Wait till you hear who's affected. That's going to make your head
spin.
Do you have
even some of the recordings that are specifically lost by these people?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Some specific recordings that have been fully, completely lost that will never, ever be fully restored again. I'll go over a couple of things, too, and why that's important.
Okay. Okay, we'll take a break now, and when we come back, Mike will give us a little more information on this. This is something else. All right, we'll talk to you in a bit.
All right.
Hey, everyone. This is James from the Zenio Chronicles. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button at the bottom of this video. And be sure to click on the bell icon so you can be notified when we release new videos. And if you aren't watching on YouTube, please go to our page and do all that stuff anyway. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. All right, welcome back, everybody. Now, we're talking here about this fire that happened in the Universal Music Archives back in 2008. The severity of it was misreported at the time, and kind of the story was squashed by Universal, and now just come out in June 2019, mm-hmm. we're finding out about all of these things that were lost, master analog tapes that were lost, right?
Yeah, these are original master analog tapes.
And now we're going to hear about some of the artists that, some of the 700 artists that lost recordings, lost their masters of their recordings.
Okay, so basically when it comes down to these master recordings, I'll talk about this in a bit first.
Yeah.
Just because you get a CD and you get a release and you get all this kind of stuff, all you're getting is literally the final version of the final take of the song that was approved by the label at that time. But when you look at other artists, jam type artists, multiple different types of...
I have an example here.
Yes.
Metallica.
Yes.
Specifically on the Load album.
Uh-huh.
The last song on the Load album, one of my favorite songs, Outlaw Torn.
Uh-huh.
They actually had to cut like a minute and a half from that song.
Uh-huh.
Because of the constraints of it fitting on the album, on the CD for release.
Yes.
For it to be a single CD.
Yes.
And in fact, I forget which single, but there was a single that was released where Outlaw Torn was the B-side of the single.
Yes.
And it's called the unencumbered version.
So it's the actual true version that they had that they couldn't cut from tape.
And actually, on their first live show with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra back in, 2000?
Uh-huh.
99, 2000, whenever that happened.
Mm-hmm.
They actually played Outlaw Torn in its full version. It's got basically some jammy guitar parts at the end.
Nice.
It's my favorite version of the song because it's got that kind of guitar riff, almost solo, that happens at the end of it that fades out. It goes on for another minute and 15 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's nice stuff.
Nice.
But so that'd be an example of that, right?
Well, yes, up to a point, but we're talking about beyond that. So how many, like when you record, especially at that time, what you were doing when you were recording is sometimes just doing a punch of a punch of a separate track. Let me rephrase that.
Okay.
Nowadays, when you do computer-based recording,
yeah,
a lot of the time what you can do is literally create your ideal version of a song and take care of all the little tidbits. There's a lot of, there's a lot of cheating that happens in the digital recording realm.
I'm sure.
Do things a million times before you get the right take, and you're like, that's what the take of the thing that I want.
Yeah, you can
right
change
there.
It up.
You know,
I remember you talking
can correct
about,
things after the fact.
Well, I think I remember you talking about recording vocals and in the digital age, you're able to record vocals in a much different way in that you can do single lines at a time.
Multiple takes or time correct or pitch correct or all this kind of stuff. And this is only recent.
Yeah.
So when you listen to a recording from a big artist from back in the day, you're not just listening to the fact that you're listening to that one recording, but that one recording could have been the fifth or sixth take.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe you'll hear in a live version something from an original recording that was done during the original session that they wanted to keep in that they omitted from the record release take.
Yeah, okay.
So who knows whether or not, how many takes of Respect by Aretha Franklin could have been done?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's a large amount of material. There is all the banter in between. Maybe somebody's jamming a thing on a riff in between songs before they go to the take and the tape is rolling.
And
they might use that later.
Yeah, use the riff for another song.
Yeah, this is not just archived takes of the albums. This is reference material. This is the stuff that sits in between the release tracks. So who knows? Like, case in point, Van Halen, which I don't believe that they're actually part of the affected artists. I think they were Atlantic, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
No, they're Warner. They were Warner.
They were Warner? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Van Halen was Warner. Led Zeppelin was Atlantic. I know a couple of them. But that being said, Van Halen's album that came out, A Different Kind of Truth is the name of it. It's okay. The one where they got David Lee Roth back and Wolfgang is on bass.
Okay.
What they did, a vast majority of that material was actually from demos from tapes that they had done from the first two or three albums. And they pulled those back in and were like, hey, what if we take this and we throw some vocals on it now? What if we take this song and we arrange it and we'll do this with the solo and we'll put this section here? But they were able to archive it. And it wasn't just on little four-track cassette. This was like, you know, original analog masters.
Full analog masters.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they weren't just taking those analog masters and doing that. I mean, it's nice to have a clear point of reference when you have a multi-track recording of even a live rehearsal demo.
Yeah.
Because at that time, a band or an artist, they come into the studio, they've got like 30 songs. And sometimes you hear eight, especially in like 1976.
Well, and you don't know what could develop into something major.
They could bring up something back in the next 10, 15, 20 years later.
You don't know when you're downstairs and you're playing scales and your lead singer is upstairs and hears the scales and comes down and says, oh my God, I have some poetry that can go with that.
Right, exactly. Because who knows what happens
and then
with
this
stuff.
You have one of the best rock songs of all time.
You very well could.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So, okay, yeah.
That stuff is capable of happening with these masters. And who so knows is, whether or not,
all,
you know,
this is all
Sheryl Crow
lost.
Decides to come up with something and I'm throwing artists that are at random. Believe me, Universal is a large company. And believe me, I'm going to get to the cream of the crop here in a minute. But how important that stuff is.
Yeah.
How important it is to not just other people, how important it is to that artist.
Oh, yeah.
To have access to
that
those.
Artist.
And go, hey, can you pull that tape? I want to digitize that. Let's make some backups of it so I can listen to it.
That's their property. That's exactly what they've created.
So essentially the idea is Universal was trusted with these artists' intellectual and physical property. A lot of these guys co-owned these, or the estates are representative. Their estates, after they have passed, are representative of them.
Oh, boy.
Okay? So now that we have an idea of what kind of material, kind of gold that could have been sitting between the stuff we will never hear. Yeah. Who knows whether everybody's like a fan of B-sides and stuff. Like there are a lot of people that have their favorite artists that listen to songs that are just like, nobody knows this hit, but I find that special.
Yeah. I remember when like the big thing for Pearl Jam fans was when we finally got a recorded version that we could play back of Yellow Ledbetter.
Yeah.
Cause that was one of those songs that for a while, the only way you got to hear Yellow Ledbetter was if you saw them in concert.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That was a big deal.
Well, you know that they recorded it, man. They had it sitting somewhere.
But then you have, I'm bringing up Prince again because Prince's estate is such a big deal. Mm-hmm. And the supposed vast amount of unreleased recorded stuff that he has that's supposed to be sitting in his own personal vault of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people have gone nuts over what the estate might try to release at some point or another. Because this is just supposed to be possibly groundbreaking music from Prince.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He's, to me, the best song he still ever made came out in 1989, but it's just my opinion.
Oh, I can agree with that. I honestly
like a lot
of Prince.
Which one are you talking about?
The Batman album?
Yeah. Batman soundtrack. The song Bat Dance.
Bat Dance is killer.
Bat Dance is amazing. Anyway.
Well, I like some of Prince's earlier stuff, his slight post-funk before it became like drum machine stuff.
I get that, yeah.
super upbeat. Kid's like 23 at the time, just kicking ass, you know.
But I mean, that's now, just it. There could be.
I will say this:
people are going nuts over that. So whatever artists that you're going to mention their estates.
Now here's the thing about Prince: he actually had his own vault, and his vault is safe.
Yes, his vault is safe. But
he is not affected here.
Well, I'm just saying. When you some of the names you're going to talk about, some of these may be people that, like you say, there's estates involved, which means that there could be hidden gems from people that were taken from us too soon.
Yeah.
Oh God. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so here we go. This is a well, like I said, there's a bunch of them, and I might even look up more.
Okay.
Okay. So these artists' archives, original tapes, were lost in this fire, or at least. These are the ones that have been affected. We do not know which albums have been affected, but we do know specifics of some.
So there's some that we know which recording sessions they came from.
Yes.
Which areas they came from.
And who knows? Some of them may have digital backups. Some of them may be safe.
Okay.
But there's a possibility that many of them do not have that.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean if they have a backup, then they have a backup of the take of the studio session. Oh, this is where the tape starts at this time. Let's go.
They may
not all
have
the stuff
everything.
That was in between.
Oh, gosh. I'm thinking of a couple of recording sessions that it would just be amazing to go back and be able to listen to everything that came out of some of those recording sessions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. That's where I'm interested. Okay, this is where it's important to me.
I'm thinking,
and it should be important to a lot of people.
Rumors.
I do not know if Fleetwood Mac was Universal.
Okay, I'm just.
I don't believe they
that's
were.
Okay. That's okay. I'm just using that as an example. That is a recording session. That Fleetwood Mac's Rumors recording session would be a recording session to have been able to hear everything that was going on.
Oh yeah,
because that was just the thing about around that recording session. That was an album from hell.
Yeah. No. Fleetwood Mac is not part of this. I don't think that they were part of Universal, stuff wasn't there. Now, I will tell you this, funny enough, a little side story. Did you know that Rumors was double recorded when it was recorded? It was recorded onto two tape machines at the same time during the recording sessions, and they did that, and they tend to do that sometimes because the amount of mixing that had to go into Rumors in order to make it sound good wore out the first reel of tape, and they were like, well, here's our backup reel. Now that we know what the mix is, we can put it on the backup reel.
Wow.
And then the same mix is done, and then tape was finished. But they went through so many of play the tape, rewind it, play it again, rewind it, play it again, rewind it. They would actually wear the tape out to where it would bust.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that was a hell of an album.
They would destroy the tape mixing it.
I'm having another Metallica thought here.
Yes.
Year and a half.
Uh-huh.
The video Year and a Half.
Uh-huh.
And of course the in many ways the most important the documentary, some kind of monster documentary.
Uh-huh.
Those kind of give you that insight into what can go into a recording session.
Yeah.
There's that whole weird song thing that Lars brings his father to listen to, and his father's talking about, yeah, that's great music if you like to hear somebody chanting in an echo chamber or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, you really get an insight of
I
what...
I would delete that.
Well, you really get an insight of what goes into the making of a record and how many other things can be in existence in and around it, that this is the stuff that can be lost from this. So
some people like to know, how was the puzzle piece together? How did you build this? I want to know what the pieces are.
Yeah, because that gives you insight onto what you do.
Yeah, exactly. It teaches me something about wanting to do that. Now, that's me speaking as a musician, but there are some people that just still want to know that. They want to know why.
Just as the fan.
You
want to know
alternate
what
takes
was in
of,
there.
Of Purple Haze and stuff like that, those are fascinating to me.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, I'm glad that, you know, Hendrix and Eddie Kramer and all, I'm glad that Eddie Kramer is still alive to give us re-releases of alternate takes of stuff that never came out before.
There's actually a weird music group. They were husband and wife, I think, at one point, that a friend turned me on to years ago called, the group's called Fleming and John.
Never heard of them.
It's kind of an eclectic group. They're out of Nashville, Tennessee area, I believe. Uh-huh. But the one album that I was familiar with, they had their lead single off the album, and they did two different versions of it. They did the kind of rock pop version of it, which was the lead single, and then they did more of a nightclub version of the song on the same album.
Oh, cool.
And
okay.
Just to give you, it gives you that feel of different interpretations of the same exact song. It's kind of neat. But
nice.
But anyway, let's get into these artists, sir.
All right.
Give me some artist names. Let me have my misery for things.
All right. I'm going to hit you with a brick right off the gate.
Oh, God.
Elton John.
Okay. I mean.
Louis Armstrong.
Ouch.
Tom Jones.
Oh.
B.B. King.
E.
Count Basie.
Oh, damn.
Jerry Lee Lewis. Chuck Mangione.
Oh.
Meatloaf.
What'd they lose a loaf?
I have no idea.
What did
we
they
don't
lose?
Know yet. They can't count
the,
it yet.
They lost the loaf.
Who? I bet you Bat Out of Hell is gone.
Oh, my God.
Probably two.
Oh, my. No, we need to take a moment here.
Because okay. This is 2008, so Bat Out of Hell 3 is still intact, I'm sure, and it was probably digitally done.
3 is probably intact, but Bat there's Out of Hell 1 and 2?
There's more.
More than Meatloaf? Are you going to hurt me more than Meatloaf?
Nine Inch Nails.
I thought Trent kept all his stone stuff.
All of Nirvana's material.
Good.
I know that you're, but think about it, man. Alternate takes, I know, stuff that wouldn't, like,
I know,
they
I know.
Can't piece together, you know, you're right anymore. It's gone.
Yeah.
Les Paul.
Damn.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Dolly Parton, oh. George Jones, Primus, Tupac, Shel Silverstein.
What did they lose of Dolly?
We don't know.
Still don't know?
I Will Always Love You is probably gone.
Oh, my God.
Like, this is the part that's just like this is the nail biter, is all I'm of this stuff is speculative.
Jolene?
There's even more. Jolene's probably gone.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they trusted Universal. All of these artists trusted Universal with this material, and they biffed it up hard, wow. Man. Okay, here's more. Cat Stevens, Steely Dan, George Strait, War.
Wow, George Strait.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence Welk.
Lawrence Welk, crap.
John Williams. Neil Young.
John?
Yep. Neil Young.
Wow.
Rob Zombie and White Zombie's material.
Damn.
Buddy Rich.
Okay, that's something.
Buddy Holly.
Ouch.
Groucho Marx. Chaka Khan. Liberace. Eartha Kitt. Kansas. Howlin' Wolf. Bill Haley and the Comets.
Whoa.
Al Green. I think I said Count Basie earlier.
Yes.
There's more. Beck. I'm going. Captain Beefheart.
Really?
Chuck Berry.
Oh, man.
Mary J. Blige, Blink 182, Pat Boone, Boston, The Brothers Johnson, Bobby Brown.
Oh, my God. Boston?
Jimmy Buffett.
Hold on.
Carol and T-Bone Burnett. Burnett and T-Bone Burnett.
Boston. That is crazy to think that album, because that's one of those debut
Holy
albums.
Stuff.
Just wow.
Glenn Campbell, Busta Rhymes.
Wow.
Cab Calloway. Belinda Carlisle.
Just the
Ray Charles.
The breadth of time for these names.
Cher. Cheech and Chong.
Oh, man.
Roy Clark. Patsy Cline.
Oh.
Joe Cocker. Judy Collins. John Coltrane. Counting Crows. Bing Crosby. Crosby and Nash. Oh, by the way, the Eagles is lost, too.
What?
Yep. Sammy Davis Jr. Bobby Darin. Neil Diamond. Bo Diddley, Big Willie Dixon, Fats Domino, Tommy Dorsey.
So wait.
Jimmy Durante.
Jimmy Durante? Okay.
Yeah.
Hold on. Buddy Holly.
Mm-hmm.
Fats Domino.
Yep.
Please don't tell me Richie's on there too.
I thought that was Big Bopper. Fats Domino wasn't on.
You're right,
the
it was Big Bopper. Okay, sorry. But still,
I'll look it up. Steve Earle, Danny Elfman. Oh, and Oingo Boingo is also affected.
Well, of course, if Danny Elfman is, damn it.
Eminem. Yeah, that includes, when I said the Eagles, I mean all of them. I mean all of them and their individual recordings. Don Henley, Glenn Frey, all of them.
Wow.
Extreme. Let's see. Ella Fitzgerald.
Damn it.
The Flying Burrito Brothers, John Fogerty.
Flying Burrito Brothers, okay.
Yeah, Peter Frampton, Aretha Franklin. Nellie Furtado.
Oh, she's like a bird.
No. Barry Gibb is on here. Please don't tell me the Bee Gees are on here. I didn't see them, but they could be labeled with a T. I'm only partway through.
Wow.
Golden Earring. Oh, man. Radar Love, dude.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Grand Funk Railroad. Al Green. I think I said Al Green.
Yes.
Guns N' Roses. Buddy Guy. Buddy Hackett. Merle Haggard.
Buddy Hackett, wow.
Yeah. Wow. There's just so many. Heavy D.
Heavy D?
Yeah. Hole. Billie Holiday. Bob Hope. John Lee Hooker. Humble Pie. Engelbert Humperdinck. Iron Butterfly. That is a band whose jams should have stayed.
Oh, wow.
That's one that I'm... Oh. Janet Jackson and Joe Jackson. Etta James.
Etta James?
The James Gang, which I didn't know was a Universal
wow.
artist. The Jets. Jimmy Eat World. Booker T. Jones.
Okay.
Quincy Jones. Damn it.
No, Soul Bossa Nova.
Oh.
That's a loss. Soul Bossa Nova gone, that is a major loss.
Yeah. Jurassic 5. Boris Karloff.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Gene Kelly. Martin Luther King Jr. His audio recordings are gone.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I mean, the original archives. I'm wondering, Eartha Kitt. I think I said Eartha Kitt earlier.
Yeah, you said Eartha Kitt.
Gladys Knight and the Pips. Patti LaBelle. There's just so much?
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I said Jerry Lee Lewis. I also meant Jerry Lewis.
Okay.
Liberace is gone. Limp Bizkit. Lisa Loeb. wow, there's just so much. And I'm only in the L's. Patti Loveless. Lyle Lovett. Loretta Lynn. Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's just, there's so much, man.
That's just...
Reba McEntire.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, these are... See, this is the thing that gets me. Joni Mitchell. That one's gone. Now, that doesn't mean that all... Now, just getting into it here.
We don't know
this does
what
not mean
is,
that all of their material is gone. We just know they're affected. Gone. Something important is gone from them. So,
wow.
Who knows? The master recordings for Big Yellow Taxi take what the heck ever is
the
gone.
The Counting Crows one that's gone.
Joni Mitchell.
The Joni Mitchell one?
That was the original one. Okay. It was Big Yellow Taxi.
I only know the Counting Crows version.
Oh, yeah. Nazareth is one. Aaron Neville, the Neville brothers. Olivia Newton-John. Night Ranger. No Doubt. Rick Ocasek of the Cars.
Okay.
The OJs. Yoko. Whoa, Yoko's affected?
Wow.
Wow. I didn't know that. It just keeps... Bernadette Peters. Iggy Pop, Billy Preston, Louis Prima, Sun Ra.
I have no idea what that is.
He is a very, very, very old blues artist, I believe. I will look. Okay. I'll look him up. REM.
Okay.
It just keeps Chris Rock. Oh yeah. So these audio are not
recordings.
Just
well, no, the audio recordings.
Yeah. No sex in the champagne room.
We're talking comedy.
Yeah.
Comedy stuff too.
Comedy albums. Yeah. Let's see, Otis Rush, and these are ones that I just know right out. Dinah Shore,
wow.
Apparently, some audio recordings for The Simpsons is gone. Smash Mouth, Patti Smythe,
wow.
Snoop Dogg, Sonic Youth, Sonny and Cher, Soundgarden. Oh no, I didn't know that. Spinal Tap. Steeler's Wheel, Gwen Stefani individually. I think I said Cat Stevens before. Sting, Sublime, Supertramp.
Wow.
Temple of the Dog. Tesla's lost.
Wait,
some
hold
of Tesla's
on, hold
recordings
on,
are lost.
Hold on. Temple of the Dog.
Yeah.
They only did one album.
It's gone. That means it's gone. If it's only one album, it's gone. Unless there was a digital archive that was done. Of something.
That's just...
But it's going to be of the individual tracks. None of these... If there was a jam that maybe... Who knows? Now, this puts it like up in the air for all of it, but
that's
it's
just crazy.
So much. Yeah. Robin Thicke, which is crazy because I thought Robin Thicke didn't have a career until like years after that.
No, actually, he did have a career earlier. There was a song he did, When I Get You Alone.
Wow. Voivod. Oh, no. That sucks.
Okay.
Veruca Salt.
Damn it.
The Wallflowers, Wang Chung, Muddy Waters.
Wow.
Weezer. Did I say Lawrence Welk?
Yes.
Okay. The Who. It's just so much, man. Johnny Winter. Bobby Womack, Leanne Womack, Y&T, Neil Young.
We actually know some people who know Y&T.
Yeah. I know their former bassist, I believe. I think he's still with them. I'm not sure. I know he's touring with another band right now, but I've met him a couple of times. Really good guy.
But this is just a crazy amount. I mean, all of these are stars that I can think of at least. I don't even know how many of them that you listed that I either have personal music of mine on iPod or that I listened to growing up.
I missed this one. Larry Gatlin.
Okay.
And Judy Garland.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. This is a major, major, major issue. This is basically all of these guys that – all of these people that poured so much of themselves into this – they poured – this is a piece of their soul on a piece of reel-to-reel tape. most likely, right? And who knows? Now, these are original archival recordings. If they were digitally recorded or they were master tapes. They were saying they were analog master tapes. So some of these people may have been purely analog only, or a lot of the time they will do production in studio. They will record an analog tape and then turn around and
sometimes gives you more of a time frame for some of these artists.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them honestly are obviously dead and have been for many years.
Yeah.
So the recordings would have been older recordings anyway.
Yeah.
But you'd look into an artist, say like, example here, an artist like Reba McEntire, who still mm-hmm. does put out music mm-hmm. occasionally. If it's analog stuff that's been destroyed and damaged, it's more likely some of her older stuff as opposed to some of her more modern stuff. It's more likely for it to be the older stuff.
Yeah.
Because that would have been the more likely time for her to have been using the analog technology.
Exactly. Exactly. But what I don't get more than anything is the fact I found this out more recently. There were backup tapes.
Yeah.
They were in the same building.
What?
And on top of that, the building didn't have any sprinklers in it. They didn't put sprinklers in the archive tape building.
That's insane.
Yes!
That's insane.
How can you not go through with as many artists that you were dealing with?
Yeah,
how could you not go through some major amount of, like, there are many things
that just don't make sense about this.
Just confuse me, and that's one of them, but the worst part about it is the chance that you will be able to hear an alternate take of whatever song, and maybe they sang it this way or they played this note on the solo or jam number, you know,
the things that are now lost to history because they can't be replicated.
Yeah, you cannot recreate
those.
There's
no reference to
come from. And just because, like I was saying earlier, this is way more important than just the record releases. Yeah, celebrate these guys for the record releases. They're some of the most celebrated artists because they deserve it. But
look at them as the artists, though. See the artistic ability.
Look at that. That means that you don't just do something and then put it out in the public and then that's it. There are so many scores of things, scores of takes, and development into the final product that you fall in love with.
I can use something from my personal experience, my theater background.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who don't want to see a play until the play is ready to go. Play is finished. It happens and goes.
Yeah.
There are other people who love the process of watching the rehearsals and watching the play come together, the formation of it, the decisions that are made by the actors to do, the specific things that they're doing, and watch the building components and pieces. And when you're doing a play, you're not going to, the first time you pick up the script, have everything perfect, exactly right, the blocking down perfectly, every part of it. There's discovery that happens with it while you're working with the people that you're working with. And to me, the most beauty of the play is how the discovery led to the final product.
Yeah.
Another example is me being the big cinephile that I am. Every time I get a DVD of a movie, and part of the reason I buy the DVDs of the movies, I'll watch the movie, and the next thing I do right after watching the movie, I go through all the special features, and I want to see as much behind the scenes stuff as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to people who hate seeing the behind the scenes stuff because it ruins the magic of the movie making for me. No, it's beautiful to see what decisions they made, what roads they went to create these things, and what roads they decided not to go down. Because it's the whole process is creative, and you see, most people just see the final product, whereas seeing the whole experience can be just as much of a enjoyment of the art, and that's what we've lost is that whole experience. We just all we have now for at least parts of these artists' stuff is we have whatever the final product was, whatever was lost in this fire. That's the experience of it gone.
Exactly.
That's the getting there gone.
Yeah, the journey is lost now.
That's sad.
Yeah,
that's a terrible thing. I think to compound onto it, 11 years of downplaying it and keeping it secret and covering it up to have it exposed now. And now, I mean, we've been lied to for 11 years about it. The artists have been lied to for 11 mm-hmm. years about it. And it's not like there's anything they can even try to do after 11 years of all of it gone. There's not much they could have done right then and there with the fire, but at least then something could have changed in the way that they store the stuff, in the way that the stuff is trusted. But that's 11 years of nothing being done in any
exactly.
way.
Exactly. It's insane. But I guess
I'm glad that we do this thing freelance and we don't have to rely on anybody else to hold on to our crap. Plus, I'm not sure how much the masters of these would be worth. Although there are a few conversations that have not made it onto the actual podcast that have been recorded that are still interesting conversations.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll release them at some point.
Well, this was an interesting topic to talk about. This is an interesting thing that happened. I invite anybody listening to do research about this, kind of see as the story develops. When we post this, Mike, can you attach links to the New York Times article?
Oh,
the article 100%.
There's a lot of information on the Wikipedia page, but I will link the Times article and I'll link the Wikipedia page as well.
And I think maybe we can revisit this one later once more information comes out about what's lost.
Yeah. I definitely want to know what albums were lost from these artists. There's so many.
Yeah, we can have kind of a part two and do some more lamentation over what was lost. Some real lamentation, knowing what... I mean, I use Reba McEntire as an example because I listened to her a lot growing up. My mom was a huge fan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Dolly Parton, my mom listened to a lot. But to find out... I mean, those are two artists that are still living, so they could still provide things for us. To find out what sessions and what times the information was lost from.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because if you look at what they were doing at the time, what else might have been there? What else might have been able to be culled from it?
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I mean, artists that are long gone, it's sad, but we really couldn't get a whole lot more from what they had. You know, it's like Buddy Holly. We had basically everything we were going to get out of Buddy Holly. So, or
you can assume
we can assume that there could have been some gems hidden in there that could have been something else.
Yeah.
But
sometimes people do that. They'll find something special or another take of something that you're as you're referring
with Nirvana.
Yeah.
There was that one song that was released after Kurt's death that was taken from what? Partial recording sessions, or
they were about to work on their third album, and it was a demo, and I think they had cut. It's obvious that they had cut that song, but they were working on that single, I believe, when he died, and so they got Dave and they got Chris back in to help fill in what wasn't there, but they constructed the song along with Butch and
around what vocal line he had recorded.
Yeah, because he had, you know, multiple takes and stuff, and he wasn't known. He was known for not liking doubles, but Butch just pushed him and pushed him and pushed him on the doubles.
And I mean, I can give you an example of an album that has meant a lot to me in my life, Avenged Sevenfold's Nightmare album.
Yeah.
Where they took as much of what they had left over from what Rev had already recorded on the album and built the album around that, brought in Portnoy to do the drumming.
Yeah.
And there's one song in particular that still has that's basically Rev's raw vocal track as the main vocal track for the song with Shadow singing over and around him.
Cool.
And it's I don't know how familiar you are with that album. I've listened to it.
I know which one it is you're talking
way
about.
Way too many times.
It was it's the primarily piano and orchestral track. I love that song.
And it's a very raw song, and it is literally like I think first or second take of Rev singing it, and it's more of a demo version of it than anything else, just to try to get the basics of the song down, which is why he's not very clear on the vocals in it.
Yeah.
He doesn't pronounce things very well, but it's just kind of a rough vocal, and that's what they had to work with and made the song out of that.
Cool.
And so, you know, they were able to get that little gem and share it with everybody. What gems do we now have lost? All right, sir. So if people want to find us, where are they going to find us, sir?
Well, you can check us out on the website, thezenchronicles.com, or if you don't want to type that much, zenchron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. You could also find us on Twitter and Facebook at that same handle, at Zenchron. If you're listening to the podcast, there are many different avenues you can take. You can head to TuneIn, you can go to Google Podcasts, you can go to Spotify, or you can check us out on our podcasts are also on as video files on Facebook and on YouTube. And if you happen to be listening to us or watching that static image of our video on YouTube. You can also like the video, please do. You can also subscribe to our channel and ring the little bell icon to make sure you get notified when we put out a new podcast.
And you can link to all of those things, I believe, through the website, correct?
Yes, yes, you can. You can actually head to zencron.com and see all that.
Fantastic. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you again later.
Have a good one, guys.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.